Everybody, welcome to the Hidden Gems podcast, and this is a show where we like to take on a streaming service and give you some recommendations that are hidden gems on that service. And this is our seventh episode on Peacock, so this can be very exciting. And I'm film critic Rachel Wagner, and Ryan is here.
Hey Rachel, it's great to be back with you once again, back in our normal format. And just a peek behind the curtain, we're recording this on a Sunday night. Usually we do this on like a Monday or a Tuesday night, but you've got some, you've double booked yourself. You've got to get the charm thing that turned back time, like in Prisoner of Azkaban, to That's be right. in two places at once.
Yes, I have FanX this weekend. If you are watching this and you're in the Utah area, I'm actually going to be on a panel on Saturday morning. So you should check that out. I'm going to be on a panel about Disney World and Disneyland. And so that's going to be super fun. All that time I've spent watching all the parks videos on YouTube is going to pay off finally.
What's the one with AJ, the girl who's named AJ? I can't remember that channel. I used to follow them for so long.
Oh, Disney Food Blog.
That's the one.
That's a good one. That's a good one. Yeah, I know all this random information about the Disney World hotels and restaurants and stuff like that because I watched those videos. And I've only been one time when I was 12, and I have no plans on going anytime soon.
I've been to Disney World in Florida like a ton of times, and in those videos, I'm like, I never knew that.
Yeah, so, I've just been to Disneyland because it's closer than Disney World to Utah, at least, but. Anyway, so that will be fun if you are in Utah and you happen to see me, say hello. I would love to say hi at the FanX. So anyway, lots going on. Plus, there's TIFF coverage happening. I hope y'all have been checking out my blog where I'm doing daily logs of all of the films that I've been watching at TIFF in the TIFF Digital Festival. It started off kind of rough, but now it's rolling along really well, and we're seeing some pretty good stuff, so that's exciting. But today we are here to talk about Peacock.
Yeah, to delay the bouquet of black roses.
Well, they have improved. They have gotten a lot more movies, I feel like, in the last little bit, and it's not just sort of leaning on The Office like they were for a while.
Yeah, you would think with something like this, you know, trying a virtual option, they would like test it out a bit. And I'm sure they did, but it's like, I don't know. It seems like if this persisted for more than a day or two, I'd be busting down their door asking for my money back.
Mm-hmm. Well, at least with Peacock, you can access most of it or a good chunk of it for free. And you just have ads, and then you have a several different tiers that you can then get the premiere access for the like the newer movies and other things like that. So it is a pretty good service in that way. That I mean, and I get it for free because I it's included in my Comcast. So that and HBO Max. So that's pretty nice.
Yeah, that is,
I mean, it's not that is true. Free because I pay for the Comcast, but. It's included, which is nice. So, well, very good. Let's dive in. Let's talk about our picks. So my first pick is from 1997. It is the biopic Selena. And I actually just watched this for the first time in January. For some reason, I had just never gotten around to watching it. So it was one of my blind spot picks over on my blog. And I do that every month. I have a blind spot pick that I do. It's a movie that that is well-regarded, maybe a cult classic, whatever's the situation, maybe got a bunch of awards that I haven't seen. And then I watch it and I give my thoughts on it. And I hadn't seen Selena, and particularly my friend Larry loves it so much and loves Selena so much, huge fan. So I decided to go ahead and see it, and I really enjoyed it. It definitely hits all your sort of musical biopic points, but I think it's helped by the fact that that this is just such a perfect role for Jennifer Lopez. I mean, she looks so much like her. She just is able to pull off the persona very well. But then also, I think that Edward James, almost as her dad, is really good. And it's just so sad the with such a tragic ending that you're kind of building and building and building for it, that that I think it may sets it apart from some of these other musical biopics. But what do you think of Selena in the film?
I've actually seen this. I did a big watch of every movie I could from 1997, and I made it to the last 2 weeks of December. So I will finish it one day, but Selena was one of them. And I liked it better than I thought I was going to. Mostly because of the relationship between Jennifer Lopez and Edward James Olmos. I love Edward James Olmos. I think he's a great actor. Funny story, I actually was a part of context. At Walt Disney World, there's a thing called the Candlelight Vigil, where they would sing Christmas carols and do the story of the birth of Jesus and all that with a celebrity narrator. Neil Patrick Harris does it every year. Gary Sinise does it every year. And I went 1 year with Edward James Olmos as the narrator. And I swear I was so close to the man, I could like reach over and like tap him on the shoulder almost. Like it was great. But I really liked him here because I loved how when he was younger, he was like doing the doo-wop kind of stuff. And he was doing like, I guess what was considered boy band stuff back then. And when he eventually got a daughter and tried to force it on her, it wasn't doing so well. And so when she turned more into her heritage, that's when things really started to click. And the heart of the movie is just her being on the rise. And it's so tragic. Like, she was killed literally by the president of her fan club. Like, that is such a horrible way to go out. It really is.
Yeah, how did you feel about that ending and how they had it all off screen and how they showed Yolanda and her sort of descent? I mean, it felt a little rushed to me. I kind of wish they'd been able to sort of spend more time with all of that. But what did you think?
I wish they would have built it up a little more. I wish that like you saw her like start at point A and slowly become more obsessed and obsessed and obsessed. Like the ticking time bomb, if you will. But I think they handled it about as gracefully and about as good a fashion as you could.
Yeah. I mean, especially because it was so fresh. I mean, this movie was made only a few years after she was killed. So they would have to be especially sort of sensitive and careful when it had just happened.
Yeah, the taste issue certainly comes into play, especially with a matter such as this, especially considering that Selena was like just about to break through. Like, she had sold out entire stadiums plural. It was like so close to being over the edge, and just getting myself down just thinking about it.
Really. Yeah, it's really sad. Yeah, but it's a good movie and a nice tribute to her. So what is your next pick?
So my first choice, and this was totally an accident, but it's the first of my two-part Will Smith duology. Both of my first picks involve Will Smith. First up is iRobot from 2005. This was directed by Alex Proyas, who also directed The Crow and also directed Gods in Egypt, but let's not talk about that. This movie is based in Chicago, 2035. It tells the story of a detective named Del Spooner, played by Smith, who lives in a world where robots and humans live together in harmony. Spooner cannot stand robots. Due to an accident involving a robot, he basically has no time for them. He calls them canners. Like, that's how disrespectful he is. The main crux of the movie is that the creator of the robot boom as we know it has been murdered, and Spooner's prime suspect is a robot, and it is called into question, "You hate robots, right? So what's up with this?" And it's especially more ludicrous considering in the three laws of robotics that were written by the dude that got killed, the first law is a robot cannot harm another human being. So there is your premise. I know sci-fi, Rachel, is a bit of a tough spot for you, but I think you'd really enjoy this if you haven't seen it. Have you seen this?
I am not. My only connection with this movie is kind of random. This movie came out when I was on my mission for my church. And this one time we were trying to teach and like create like a spiritual, you know, atmosphere, like a positive atmosphere with this one woman, and her, somebody in the other room was watching iRobot, and it was so loud. And I was just like, somebody turn it off. And so I have this like little slight resentment to iRobot because it was ruining our lesson. But that's my only connection with iRobot. I have not seen it. Like, there's like a gap in my movie knowledge from 2003 to 2005, because that's when I was on my mission. And I mean, of course, I've slowly started to make up and watch those movies, but there's still a bunch that I haven't seen because you don't watch movies when you're on a mission. So,
yeah, but I know sci-fi is a bit tricky for you, but I think you'd really enjoy this because it has a main thread of this mystery. The mystery is really what sells this whole thing. And and it really is interesting because Spooner is so against robots that it's like trying to separate his hatred for robots versus his objectivity towards this case is like trying to separate the spaghetti from the sauce. And there are many great scenes, especially one with the main doctor. I believe she's played by Michelle Monaghan, but I'm not sure. Actually, let me look that up.
Bridget Monaghan.
Bridget.
What it says here. Yeah.
I was close with the last names of these. And there's a great scene where they're just yelling at each other that, like, he calls him just, or he, she calls him paranoid, and he just, like, tells her, "You are the dumbest smart person I have ever met in my life. What makes you think that these robots are so good? Like, what makes them so damn better than the rest of us?" And it's just, it's such a great exchange because, you know, Spooner is coming from a personal place. He doesn't, he's not like trying to be like robot racist. It just, he has a reason. He's got baggage. And everyone else sees him as like, dude's stuck in the past. He's a bitter clinger. And there's just a lot of great stuff in this. I think it's really underrated.
Very cool. Yeah, I've heard good things. I have, yeah, like I said, I haven't seen it, so definitely maybe one of these days I'll have to give it a shot. All right, my next pick is the movie called Draft Day, and this is a movie stars Kevin Costner, and it's about, he plays the like manager.
He's the general manager.
Yeah, of a football team. And he's responsible for the draft day picks. And it's, this movie has Chadwick Boseman, Jennifer Garner, Frank Langella in it. It's got a great cast.
Dennis
and Lee. It really reads like, it feels like a Aaron Sorkin movie. If you like that kind of like, you know, banter, that kind of back and forth, I think that this is pretty close to that kind of thing. And I think that it moves along pretty well and has good characters and is a, I mean, I don't know anything hardly at all about football. So it's just the performances and the film. It's directed by Ivan Reitman, who, you know, was a really fun director. But I liked it. I thought it was good. I thought it was engaging.
Yeah, my thing with football is that I love watching it. I even like playing it on occasion, but it is like watching it on like TV. It's like, rather not. And so it's weird. But when it comes to draft day, I was sucked into this movie from like frame one because it's literally just people getting on the phone and like making deals with each other. But it's so engaging that you're just like what is happening? And so Kevin Costner's really good in it. The late Chadwick Boseman, who's sadly no longer with us, may rest in peace. He's really good. And this is why I was so sad when Chadwick passed on. And like everybody remembers him for Black Panther, and that's an incredible legacy to leave behind. But he also had these smaller roles like in 42 or Get On Up or Draft Day or 21 Bridges that he did with the Russo brothers, that he was subtly really good at and nobody really talks about it. And obviously Black Panther takes a lot of precedent, but there are several other movies that he was in where he was really good. And there's a great exchange between he and Costner over the phone where the scenario is that his character, Chadwick Boseman's character, sent out a mean tweet saying that Kevin Costner's character made the wrong decision. And he's, and Costner's like, please stay off of Twitter for the love of God. And then finally Chadwick Boseman's character's like, you made the wrong decision. Like I sacked the number one draft guy. And it's, and so, and what eventually happens at, with the big twist involving the Chadwick Boseman character is so satisfying, and it's handled so well. I won't spoil it, but it's really good.
Yeah, it is good. Do you think that that's a good comparison with the Aaron Sorkin?
Yes, absolutely. If I honestly half the time think it was written by him, like it was, it's these characters who are so eccentric, and like in any other movie would be like the weirdo, but they commingle with each other, and so they kind of balance each other out.
Yeah, weirdly. Definitely. All right, well, what is your next pick?
So my next pick is the second half of my Will Smith duology, and it's called Focus. This was released in 2015. It stars him and Margot Robbie. Smith plays a thief, and a very good one. He's not a thief, he's a forger. And he makes his living basically by forging things and like hacking other people's identities. And he's looking for that one big job. However, he stumbles upon a protege played by Margot Robbie, and the two eventually fall in love with each other. However, because, you know, Will Smith's character's a lone wolf, he lets her go. And so cut to a few years later, Robbie's become a really good forger in her own right, and so the two come together to go on that big job. I really enjoyed this movie when I first saw it, and Margot Robbie's go on to be Harley Quinn and stuff, and obviously that takes massive precedent. However, she's been really good in these smaller roles, like in Focus. The first half of this movie is really great, and the second half kind of takes a dip in quality. It's still good, but it's a noticeable dip. The first half is awesome, and it culminates with a scene at a football game where Will Smith challenges this Chinese billionaire to like this game of, I bet you that they're going to score a first down, and then it happens, and then Smith keeps losing and losing and losing, and then he bets his entire cash stock that he has on him, which is like $1.1 million. And Margot Robbie's like, what are you doing? And he's like, I got this. And Smith eventually wins. And it is just, it's a plant and payoff that is done so well. And the first half of this movie is so good. And like I said, the second half is kind of, it's kind of there. But that first half is really, really makes the movie worth it.
Yeah, I have never seen this movie. I remember hearing about it briefly, but it's one of those ones that kind of came and went, and I just never saw it. So that's good to hear that it's a good one, that it's worth seeing at least.
It was my first exposure to Margot Robbie, and she's gone on to be Harley Quinn, and she's producing things now like Promising Young Woman. So She's gone on to have massive success. Yeah. But this was the first time I ever saw her. I know she was in Wolf of Wall Street and About Time, but I actually saw Focus first.
Mm-hmm. Cool. All right, well, my next pick is one of my favorites. You could maybe argue this is not that hidden, but I don't know. I think it doesn't get quite the love it deserves. It's called About a Boy, and this is from 2002, and this stars Hugh Grant in his one of his more Hugh Grantiest kind of performances, where he plays a man who kind of sails through life just living off the royalties of his dad's song that he wrote, this Christmas song that he wrote. And one day he even brags that they say no man is an island. He says, no, absolutely, I am an island, and I'm proud of being an island. And one day he meets this little boy played by Nicholas Hoult, who would go on to do great things in Mad Max Fury Road and many other films. This little boy kind of attaches himself to the Hugh Grant character. He has a single mom played by Toni Collette, who's very emotional, and she's great. And then there's this woman that the Hugh Grant character is kind of interested in, played by Rachel Weisz, and she's great. And this movie is charming and sweet and funny. It's based on a Nick Hornby novel, and I love Nick Hornby novels. I think he is such a good writer. And it's, you know, starts out, he's very cynical and, you know, kind of rude. And then he learns and grows and changes. And the ending is very, very fulfilling. And it's a really good one. Have you seen this?
It's strange because at my local library, they have all the fiction DVDs alphabetized. And About a Boy is usually one of the first, if not the first, like in the A's. And I had this like idea for like 5 minutes of I'm going to watch all of the fiction DVDs like in order. And About a Boy was number one, and I got it, and I never watched it.
I'll
do that one day, but I've heard good things about this. I mean, I believe Hugh Grant is celebrating a birthday today when we're recording this, so happy birthday to him.
He's
like a charm machine, that man. He really is.
Mm-hmm. And this was nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay, and I can see why, because it's really, really good. Good adaptation of the novel.
Even in Paddington 2, when he's a villain, he's still charming.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. So, yeah, you should definitely check this one out when you have a chance. And it's like a mildly Christmas movie. But if you want to watch something that's a Christmas movie, but not like a hardcore Christmas movie, you could watch this.
So wait, this character's living off the royalties of this one song?
Mm-hmm.
What is, like, All I Want for Christmas Is You from Mariah Carey? Like, what is this song?
No, it's like Santa's Super Helper, Super Sleigh or something. I can't remember what the song is. But yeah, I mean, granted, he doesn't have like high living expenses. You know, it's just sort of him. And yeah, that's what he, because he says at the very beginning, he talks about how he lives his life in units, time units, and that he has, you know, getting his hair cut to units and these things. Anyway, and he thinks he has everything all figured out. He thinks he has the perfect life figured out. And then this little boy comes in and spoils it all. So, what is your next pick?
So my next choice is from 2003, and it is called The Rundown. This stars The Rock in one of his very first roles, as well as Sean William Scott, Rosario Dawson, couldn't think of her name, and Christopher Walken. It tells the story of The Rock, who is a bounty hunter. He's not a lethal one. He basically is like, hey, collect this guy, he owes me money, or he owes me something. And he collects the thing. Like, the first job that he does is to collect a Super Bowl ring, or legalese version of Super Bowl, since they can't say it, since it's trademarked. But he's been doing this for a while, and he wants out. And so his boss is like, one job, and you're out of here. You're going to have to go down to, like, the worst part of Brazil and find my stepson, who I don't even like, but you got to find him anyway because he has made certain people very mad. And so it's a recovery mission. Sounds simple, right? Well, he's played by Sean William Scott, and he is kind of he's kind of annoying and is very, doesn't want to go back, but it's basically the irresistible force meeting the strangely immovable object of The Rock and Sean William Scott, respectively. But at the same time, The Rock gets roped into this revolution where this town has been taken over by this guy named Hatcher, played by Walken, who has the money, the weapons, all of that, and the revolutionary, played by Rosario Dawson. And The Rock's character is the type who's like, I don't want any part of this. You know, I'm just here to get in and get out. And everything happens from there. This is a movie that I have a lot of memories of because it's one of my dad's favorites, and he and I would watch it a lot. And it's not exactly like a wondrous movie. It is what it is, but what it is done very well. This was directed by Peter Berg, who would go on to direct Patriot's Day, Lone Survivor, and what's the other one with Mark Wahlberg? Deepwater Horizon, the Berg and Berg trilogy, as I call it. And so he would go on to have a lot of success there, but this was one of his first directing debuts, if my memory serves me right. And he does a really good job. All the action is done in camera, and it looks like they used actual stunts. There's not like an ounce of CGI done here, which I find very admirable. And The Rock, considering that he was a former wrestler, he could do his own stunts because that's what he did for literal years. And so there's a great fight between he and this other revolutionary who's like really into kung fu, and it's super great. It's really underrated. Christopher Walken's there also. He does Christopher Walken things, and that's always a lot of fun. And this movie's just really fun. It's a good time.
What's it called again?
The Rundown.
The Rundown. Okay, I never heard of this, to be honest. Interesting. When was it made?
03. So this was when The Rock was wrapping up his wrestling career full-time and literally getting into movies. Because after this, he would do Walking Tall and The Game Plan, and the rest, as they say, is history.
Like I said, 2003 to 2005, that's like that void where I was gone.
The negative zone, if you will.
Yeah. Very good. Cool. All right. Well, my next pick is a pretty well-loved rom-com, but I still don't think most rom-coms get the love they deserve. So I think it's a hinge gem in that way. It is How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. And in this movie, you have Kate Hudson, Matthew McConaughey, and they would go on to make many terrible rom-coms, but this is one that's actually good. And basically, they both are, he's made a bet in that he can make Kate Hudson's character fall in love with him in 10 days. But then she's made a bet that she can make him, she can just be the worst and make and ruin the relationship. So they're both kind of at the same time, because she's writing an article about how women ruin their relationships, and he's trying to, you know, win her over. And so like the two of them combined, you know, it's chaos, but it's very funny and charming and a good kind of screwball comedy. It's got Adam Goldberg, Catherine Hahn is in this, who we all loved in WandaVision, B.B. Newworth from Frasier, she's in this. So it's got a fun cast, and I don't know, I just think for this kind of a rom-com, it's very well written and very well done, and they have good chemistry. Even in the bad movies, they have pretty good chemistry, Matthew McConaughey and Kate Hudson. But in this one, they actually have a script that makes that work and makes this kind of premise work. And so it's a good one. It's a good romantic comedy.
Yeah, I kind of avoided this one because I felt like McConaughey was kind of like in this rom-com phase for the longest time. And I was like, you're a good actor. Why are you doing this?
But I think it's because this one was so good that then they kept trying to recreate the magic, and it wasn't as good as scripts. And so why it fell. And this one was such a, you know, like a big hit and everything. And I think that's what the problem was, is that they just kept trying, and Kate Hudson especially, kept trying to kind of recreate what worked so well in this one. But you got to have a script.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so I avoided this for the longest time, but since you like it and I trust your opinion on a lot of things, I might as well give this one a shot. Yeah.
I think you'd like it. It's a good romantic comedy, in my opinion. So, all right, what is your next pick?
So the trademark hard left coming from rom-com to historical epic about ancient Rome. My next pick is The Eagle. This was directed by Kevin MacDonald, who I believe directed Waterworld. Let me check. Yes. I'll cut this out. No, I guess that was a different Kevin MacDonald. I'm sorry. So this movie was directed by Kevin MacDonald, and it starred Channing Tatum and Jamie Bell. It tells the story of a character named Marcus, played by Tatum, who is the son of a general who was lost and never returned. They were a very famous Roman legion of, they were known as the Ninth Legion. And they had a trademark emblem of an eagle. They were called the Eagles of the Ninth. And they went into Rome-occupied Britain. This takes place in 140 AD. So Rome basically owned everything at this point. They went in there and they never returned. And so Marcus, with this kind of burning in the back of his mind, is like, I'm going to get that eagle. And so he, along with his slave, played by Jamie Bell, go in after it. And what they find is, it's not pretty, but they eventually do find what they're looking for. It's a historical epic, but it's more historical fiction. This is based on a fictional book. From what I've read, the eagle was real. However, the events of this movie were upped for dramatic effect, let's just say. However, that doesn't stop me from liking this movie. I think it is definitely underrated. I think people appreciate Channing Tatum as an actor really a lot nowadays, but I've liked him for a really long time. And this movie is one of the reasons why. I love that he has like a mission from the very beginning. I love driven characters. It's like something happened in my past that it's a stain that I can't get rid of. The only way to get rid of it is if I right the wrong. And so he has to go and do that. And there's a lot of action here. There's a lot of swords and sandals. It's definitely a movie up my alley. This movie got a lot of hate, and I can certainly understand why in some cases. However, this is another movie where I'm like, am I watching the same thing here? It's like a movie that I really enjoy.
This is another one I had never heard of before. So evidently it escaped my radar. I never heard of it until you mentioned it tonight. So that's interesting.
Also, Jamie Bell is super underrated as well. He's in one of my favorite TV shows, Turn Washington Spies. He's really good in there. Mm-hmm. He's been in other movies where he's been really good as well.
Billy Elliot, he was good in that.
Yes, very. Yeah. That's a good one as well.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Interesting. All right. Well, my last pick is actually the 2003 version of Peter Pan. And aside from maybe the Disney animated classic, I think that a lot of people agree that this is the best version of Peter Pan, maybe even like this even better than the animated classic, because there's some awkward parts about the animated classic. But anyway, this version is really good. That you have Jason Isaacs as Captain Hook, and playing the father, his father. So he plays both roles. He's really good, really fun. It has everything that you want out of a Peter Pan movie. You have Lynn Redgrave in playing a role. You have the main lead is Jeremy Sumpter, and I don't know what else he did, but he's good playing Peter Pan. And I don't know, I like the special effects. I like the storytelling. It covers all of your Peter Pan bases. So
who plays Captain Hook? I can't find him.
Jason here. Isaacs plays Captain Hook and the father both.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. He's a lot of fun in the movie. And a lot of people have all this nostalgia for Hook. I don't. I'm not one of those people. I was kind of just a little too old to have nostalgia for Hook. But I think this is a lot better than Hook, in my opinion.
Honestly, I never knew Dante Bosco was in Hook. I always knew him for voicing Zuko in Avatar The Last Airbender.
Oh, really?
It wasn't until after the fact that I learned he was Rufio. I'm like, oh, that's cool. Because oh. I've never seen Hook. I've heard, critically, it was like, what the heck is this? But like people of a certain age are like, oh my God, Hook is the greatest. And
so, yeah. I mean, I certainly don't hate it, but I think it's one of those movies that was so praised, so many people have said it's underrated, that now it's like, verging on maybe being a little overrated, you know what I mean? Being
properly rated at this
point. Hunchback of Notre Dame for me is that way as well. Like it was called being underrated for so long that now I feel like now it's getting a little overrated.
I think for me, Hunchback is also properly rated. It was underrated for a long time, but I think now as I've seen more animated stuff, I think my appreciation for it has gone up a little weirdly.
Yeah, another movie, it's not my favorite. I don't hate it. I don't really hate any of the Disney anime classics, but maybe Brother Bear, I don't like that. But yeah.
I recommended it that one.
But Peter Pan is a good movie, and I think it's better than Hook. So that's all I have to say. So what is your final recommendation?
So my final pick is again from 2011. I did not plan that either. And it is called The Adjustment Bureau. This is a movie that I thought I recommended, but then I checked our letterbox, which God bless you for keeping that letterbox list. And so I can check and be like, have I recommended this before? And keeping me straight in that regard. So thank you for that. And I checked and it was not on the list. So I'm like, well, I'm going to recommend it now. The Adjustment Bureau tells the story of a man named David Norris, played by Matt Damon. He is an aspiring congressman. However, he lost his last election because, well, he pantsed himself in a nightclub. So that tanked his chances. However, he is a front runner to be a congressman now. However, he meets a woman, played by Emily Blunt, and the two fall in love. However, that's not a part of Matt Damon's plan, as he is approached by a group of people known as the Adjustment Bureau. They have seen all of Matt Damon's life, and they are hell-bent on keeping him set on his plan, and they do not see Emily Blunt as any part of that plan. It's a complete detour, and it would just ruin everything. This is a movie that, when I saw it, I didn't know what to expect, but I ended up loving. To the fact that, like, I bought the Blu-ray, and I watch it, like, every year. Like, it's one of those movies that I love, but I hear nobody talk about. I actually plan on reviewing it for a Better Than You Remember one day. It's that good. I just love the idea of it, because it deals with the whole question of, you can either have a life of purpose or a life of meaning. You can't have both. But then the movie also posits, maybe you can have both, because if the life of meaning gives you purpose, then there you go, you're all set. And so it is a lot smarter than the average bear, I will say that. It's also Matt Damon, he's really good as always. Emily Blunt is awesome as well. But then there's smaller actors you wouldn't know. There's small actors that are really good here as well. You got Terrence Stamp, who appears, and he's really good. Anthony Mackie's in here, pre-MCU, and he's really good as well. The dude from Mad Men, who's like Don Draper's second, I can't think of his name right now, but he's in a lot of stuff, and he's a second in there, but he's really good as well as, like, the main guy going after Dane. And this isn't really an action movie, but there are several action sequences that use CGI and the practical effects of New York so well. Like, they actually use Yankee Stadium, which, considering the fact that Matt Damon is from Boston, I'm pretty sure he had to, like, bring a vial of holy water to, like, bless himself, because he thought he was going to, like, be set on fire, but it's not even over there. The Adjustment Bureau is really, really good. Watch it if you haven't.
Yeah, I have seen this one. It's been a while since I've seen it. And you know, you got to love Emily Blunt. And I think that her and Matt Damon had good chemistry that I recall. I remember feeling like that this sort of felt a little bit like Inception light. But I like I said, it's been a long time since I saw it. But I remember enjoying it.
John Slattery, that's his name. I just found.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yeah. All right. Well, cool. Yeah, I think that's one would be interesting to revisit, because I just don't remember it that well. So that would be interesting. So there we go. That is our picks. Let us know if you're listening what you think of all 10 of our picks, and what have you been watching on Peacock? We'd love to hear your thoughts in the comment section or on Twitter. And Ryan, where can people find you?
They can find me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd at RyanCam20. Then there's, of course, my YouTube channel, which is just called RyanCam. tonight I'm going to be uploading my first reaction to From Up on Poppy Hill. So that's going to be interesting to see what you all have to say there. On Wednesday, I'm going to be dropping my review for Prisoners as part of my Villeneuve series, and my friend Jacob Martin is going to be a part of it. So that's going to be really cool. Monday's going to be a Twilight Zone vlog, and then Friday I'm going to be dropping a new release review for The Eyes of Tammy Faye. Saturday will be Cry Macho, and then Sunday, let me check my board, then Sunday is going to be a video I was going to release a lot sooner than this. However, the quality was just like basement levels. It wasn't good. It's going to be my video on The Big Lebowski. It's Better Than You Remember. So if you haven't checked me out, please do.
Yeah, that should be interesting. Definitely I'll follow Ryan's channel. All the information will be in the description, so make sure you check that out. If you're listening on iTunes, please leave your ratings and reviews. We really appreciate that. And you can find me at Rachel's Reviews, all of our social media, iTunes, YouTube, and on Rotten Tomatoes. Then make sure you also check out the Hallmarkies podcast. If you're watching this video, please give us a thumbs up and subscribe to the channel. We appreciate that so much. We also have patron group. We just had our watch along for this month and it was really fun. So it's only $2 a month to join and it really helps us out a lot. So please check out the Patreon. And then also we have a merch store, which has tons of fun designs. So take a look over there. And thanks so much, everybody. We'll talk to you later. Bye, everyone.
Bye.